What's the situation?
Anshan, I think he's suffering from depression. Rishan.
Okay, when's the shunning thing gonna end?
Anshan, never. Rishan. I think he wants you all to come out to the parking lot and watch him die.
Is it nice outside?
It's gorgeous. Let's go.
Do I need my jacket?
No, really, it's very nice. Come on!
Will I be too warm in a long sleeve tee?
Everyone's gonna be fine in exactly what they're wearing. Let's go!
Black.
You have to put the gold jacket.
For 16 seasons, you set the standard. Kill yourself!
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss here with you once again. 0-3, season's over. It is September 27th. Before we get into everything, you know what we got to do. We got to take care of the housekeeping. So first things first, you can follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. All right. Well, the Giants are 0-3 again. The issues that you and I have been preaching the organization has had for years are as prevalent as ever. You know, a few episodes ago, we sort of acknowledged that there's been a bit of a turn on the fan base where a lot of people are now on the same side. So come one, come all, let us all rally together and let's record a podcast. Let's have an episode, huh? Let's have a little fun with this misery that we're having. So, first of all, shame on me. I thought the Giants were going to beat the Falcons. I guess I'm a fucking idiot. I thought that the Giants were going to win basically the entire game up until, I'd say, when the Falcons got the ball back for the last time. You just sort of knew how it was going to end. It's basically how a majority of Giants games have ended over the last few years. Do you want to start with the game, or do you want to start with just sort of the overall franchise state of the union? Because, go ahead.
Let's start with, first of all, how are you, Ethan? You doing
good? Not good. Not good.
I know you're not doing good. I could tell just by texting you back and forth the last, what is it?
24 hours. 20 hours.
20 sure. hours. Seeing your tweets. It's pretty evident that you're pretty emotional. You're how I was last week.
Yes.
But I'm great. I mean, this team can't hurt me anymore. You say that.
But we're stupid. Like, that's what fandom is. We get sucked back in.
It can't hurt me anymore this year.
Okay.
But this game in particular, it's sort of like a microcosm of what the Giants have become. Like, the Giants don't know how to win games.
Yes.
Like, that, like,
it's been evident for
years. It's pretty simple. Like, they don't know how to win games. Like, they don't know how to make the plays that win you football games. Make that throw. Make that block. Get that interception. You know, recover that fumble. Get that stop. They don't know how to do those type of things in key moments of a game that will help you win a game. They don't know how to do that. And I thought yesterday, we saw that. Giants had the ball after Atlanta tied the game at 14. They had a chance to go down the field, possibly kick a game-winning field goal, score a touchdown. They didn't do that. Prior to that, Adoree Jackson had a chance to put the game away with a just... I think I could have made that interception. And I'm not a professional football player, obviously. But he dropped it. Logan Ryan had a chance to make a play earlier in the game. Couldn't make it. They don't know how to win games. It's that simple. Like, they just don't know how to do it. It's why they're losing the way they're losing. And yesterday was a microcosm of that. Like, it is who they are. And for me, and I don't know how you're taking it, but for me, I'm pretty much expecting this to happen. Like, I pretty much go into the game knowing that, hey, there's one of three things that are going to happen. This game either is going to not be close and you're going to get blown out, or this game is going to get close, but somebody's going to make a mistake down the stretch and there's your usual suspects. The quarterback turns the football over. The defense, you know, has an interception that they just drop. You know, there's a penalty that, you know, takes away a big play. Like, I'm pretty much ready for something like that to happen. And the third option is you're going to have a situation where you can win the game, but because you can't make that play, you're going to end up losing. So I pretty much am, like, ready for it before the game even starts. I didn't think that we're going to beat Atlanta. I thought week two was demoralizing for this team. I don't think they have that mental toughness to overcome what happened in week two. And then you factor in all the pressure of the season and sort of this mandate that was put, and like everything with the fans being fed up. Like, I just didn't think that they could overcome this, even on a special day like Sunday with the team retiring Eli Manning's jersey and the specialness of that, and how there was really a lot of fans there. They're not mentally tough enough to overcome what happened on Thursday. And we saw that. And, you know, as a fan, I'm ready for it. It didn't hurt me that they lost. I've been embarrassed as a Giant fan for the past 5 years, so there's nothing more that they can do to embarrass me than they already have. So, listen, this is the new norm with this team. And the quicker we accept it, the less painful it's going to be.
Well, some good points. Here's the thing. I tweeted this yesterday, and I think we sort of spoke about it, right? You're one of the fans that had decent expectations coming into the season.
Yes.
Right? I don't think I'm mischaracterizing your view of the team. I think a lot of people had these expectations.
I thought they were going to be a playoff team. I'll just go out and put it out there.
A lot of these expectations were solely based on the team's timeline. Now, I tweeted this yesterday. If you got it then, congratulations, you got it. If you didn't understand what I meant by that, I'll reiterate it here. A lot of fans had expectations because of the timeline. They see the owner allowing the GM to spend. They see a second-year head coach. They see a lot of top draft capital being used over the last few years. They have a quarterback going into year three. On any well-run team or in any well-run organization, that is typically the recipe of success. This team's ready. This team has the pieces. And I'll go back even further to the four phases that I referenced a few episodes ago, where you can do things the wrong way with bad results, the wrong way with right results, the right way with wrong results, and the right way with the right results. And you see the Giants on this timeline with zero regard for whether or not these decisions were the right ones. Is Daniel Jones the right quarterback at number six? Is hiring a special teams coordinator with no head coaching experience the right head coaching hire? Is spending a first-round draft pick on a wide receiver after you just spent $20 million on Kenny Galladay a good decision? Okay? People just don't want to analyze these decisions on their own and just say, oh, look at the timeline and let's see how it plays out. Well, we're watching how it played out. And almost none of the aforementioned moves were the right moves. And now here we are sitting here at 0-3 debating once again when the owner is going to fire the general manager. Are there going to be any coaching staff shakeups? The fact that the Giants are averaging, I think it's almost 2 points more per game on offense this year than last year, is inexcusable and an absolute joke, given how bad their offense was last year. The fact that they cannot produce an explosive play to save their lives is an embarrassment. And this team, we have spoken about it until I'm blue in the face. The margin of error for this team is nil. You can try to dink and dunk your way down the field, but that only works when every cog in the machine is firing on all cylinders. You cannot have 7-8 minute drives with fucking Ben Bredsen and Nate Solder on your offensive line. That is not going to work. With Billy Price starting at center, that is not going to work. You need the explosive plays. You went out, you fucking paid Kenny Golladay $1 million. You spent your first round pick on a wide receiver who makes people miss all the time. And the limited receptions that he had yesterday, we saw he can make people miss in space.
Yeah.
Okay? Your shitty players, okay? Evan Engram's going to have a drop. An offensive lineman is going to commit a crippling holding penalty. Your quarterback might fumble the football. You cannot keep dinking and dunking your way down the fucking field and expect to win in the NFL unless your roster is impeccable. And we have seen time and time again that this roster is not impeccable. How we woke up this morning and we rolled over, we grabbed our phones, and we saw Ian Rappaport and Adam Schefter tweeting, and there was not a single tweet about not even Jason Garrett being fired, but having his play calling responsibilities taken away, or them even considering making a change, is what is demoralizing. You and I both can go into these games from now on with zero expectations as fans, but when the organization is not just ignoring the incompetence, but embracing it, that is what frustrates me most. Okay? Weiss, we have entered year three of Daniel Jones as the starting quarterback. If fans want to go out there and say, I believe in this guy, yes, absolutely. Like, I think that he can be the franchise guy, right? I'll disagree with you. I will. I've said it a million times. Do I think that Dan Jones is just an awful sack of shit? No, I don't believe that. But do I believe that he has the ceiling to be the guy, that dude? No, I don't. The problem is this offense is not doing him any favors. Any future general manager or head coach that comes in to try to fix this mess that has any semblance of self-preservation is going to want to know, am I going to ride with this guy? Or am I going to self-preserve myself and just ship him off, try to find a new quarterback, and reset my clock? Because this organization's been dysfunctional for years. And I want the most job security that I can get if I'm going to step in and take this job. The fact that we have basically 14 weeks left for an 0-3 team, we have no clue when the next win is going to come from. The offense put up 14 points against a defense that in weeks 1 and 2 averaged giving up 40 points to opposing offenses. And the Giants had 10 days to prepare. The fact that Jason Garrett has not been fired yet is an absolute abomination. We need to know, is Dan Jones that dude? You cannot definitively say yes. And for me, using the 6th overall pick on a guy where you definitively cannot say yes, where the Giants didn't even have Kyler Murray as QB1, by the way. Okay, so that goes, evaluation is a totally other problem.
That's a much deeper problem.
Yes. You need to uncork this guy. We need to know. And we need to know now. Because Weiss, this team has shades of 2017 written all over it. Kenny Golladay is already screaming at coaches on the sideline. Evan Engram is going to be a free agent. Okay? He's getting booed off the field. Saquon Barkley is seeing ghosts. And even the fans that supported him as the 2nd overall pick have turned on him. Okay? We have a right tackle who wasn't even sure if he wanted to keep playing football anymore. We have a head coach who is punting on 4th and 3 from the fucking opponent's territory. Okay,
39-yard line.
At the 39-yard line, he's doing that. Okay, if you keep Jason Garrett for any longer, forget about what Landon Collins going on the radio and calling Eli Apple a cancer. Forget Ben McAdoo being a fucking asshole. Can you, envision this team being 0-7 with all the money that they've put into these quote-unquote superstars, with the draft capital that they've used on these guys who are coming up on 2nd contracts? Do you have faith in Joe Judge based on what you've seen so far and fucking Jason Garrett and Freddie Kitchens and Patrick Graham and fucking Dave Gettleman, who basically every former player that's played for him hates his guts? look me in the eyes and tell me that you have faith in this coaching staff to keep it together from going from bad to worse. If you thought that this was rock bottom, starting 0-3 and losing to the Falcons, how about 0-7 and having the entire team revolting? Okay? This has the opportunity much worse. And I've been ranting for a while, but I'll finish with this. The worst part about all of this is that no matter how bad it gets, John Mara booed at the it was awesome. You know,
I loved it.
You got fans yelling at him to kill himself.
Yeah,
absurd. Jordan, our good friend Jordan Ron on ESPN, runs into John Mara after the booing.
Yeah.
He goes, John, what'd you think of the booing? Oh, you know, I'd boo also if we were 0-2 and down at the half. You fucking moron. That's not why we're booing. We're booing because the last 5 years have been miserable. You have shown the complete inability to run a franchise. You have not made one proper decision as it pertains to player evaluation, scouting evaluation, coaching evaluation. We have been in purgatory for years without any iota of hope. And you think we're booing you because at the start of the 2021 season, we're 0-2 and down at the half? No. And the fact that he does not understand that is so much more concerning and just totally rips away any faith and hope that a fan can possibly have of him being able to right the ship. Because if he had a clue, if he had an ounce of self-respect, Jason Garrett would be the fuck out of here yesterday. Dave Gettleman wouldn't have even been the GM this past offseason and given a blank check.
Or less.
The guy's an idiot. And that quote alone, I'm done. I don't understand how you can just listen to that and not think that the guy doesn't get it.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you are... You are really, really angry, and
I'm heated.
Listen, just to understand what you're. I mean, basically, the Giants, if I'm understanding you correctly, holding on to Jason Garrett, are basically really fucking themselves long term because you're not getting Jason Garrett's play calling, offense, whatever, is hindering you from getting a full or real evaluation on Daniel Jones.
Yes.
In a year that is very important for Daniel Jones.
Correct.
And through 3 games, we have seen subtle improvements, especially with him not turning the football over. Mm-hmm. But it's really hard to see if there is that next level with this quarterback because this offensive coordinator, this offense, this head coach is sort of hindering that. And it's just causing further damage for the Giants.
The nicest thing you can say about this guy is that he stopped throwing interceptions. That is the nicest thing. Oh, he throws a nice deep ball. Okay, well, we see it like once a game.
Exactly. Like, so I want to see it more.
We need a proper evaluation. Do I think that he's the guy? No, I don't. I didn't think he was the guy when they drafted him 6th overall. To this day, I still don't believe that he's the guy. But you know what? I need the opportunity to be proven wrong. I need the opportunity to get proven wrong.
Or proven right.
We've said it repeatedly for the last 4 years since Gettleman came in. Prove me wrong. Prove that you're the right general manager. Prove that taking a running back 2nd overall was the right move. Prove that Daniel Jones is the guy. Prove that you know how to hire a coaching staff. Prove me wrong. We have been proven wrong like 2 or 3 times in the last 4 years.
Yes.
Now, let someone come in here and prove that I'm wrong about Dan Jones. Because if not, we have 2 top 10 picks. We have a lot of time for one of these college quarterbacks to establish themselves as the clear number one. Because right now, there's just a bunch of like guys that look like they're good. Still a lot of time. Guys like Zach Wilson didn't emerge until like the three quarters, a half left in the season.
It was like Thanksgiving. Okay? Around Thanksgiving, we started seeing.
There's still a lot of time for one of those guys to develop. And you know what? The NFL landscape changes every year. There's going to be a disgruntled veteran. There's going to be guys who hit the market. And you have 2 top 10 picks. We need to fucking know, is he the guy or is he not the guy? And Jason Garrett has not given us that opportunity. He needs to be gone yesterday.
Yeah, I think that is if you're looking for the main reason why Jason Garrett needs to be fired, outside of the fact that, you know, his offense stinks. You got to get an evaluation on your quarterback, and you simply can't get that with this type of play calling. Daniel Jones seems handicapped, and I think you nailed it. You got to know, you owe it to yourself, because regardless what your feeling is of Daniel Jones, whether you think he's the guy or you're with Ethan and you don't think he's the guy, you owe it to yourself, because the investment you made, a number 6 overall pick, to see after 3 years, what do I need to do? Do I need to completely turn the page? Do I need to say, no, this is what I need to do to better his surrounding? You have to figure all that stuff out, and you simply are not doing that by continuing to have Jason Garrett call plays, continue having Jason Garrett, the offensive coordinator. But I think the most, how can I put this? The sad part, and really the part that makes you so hopeless about this entire situation, is not only did Jason Garrett not get fired last year, when we saw clearly that Daniel Jones regressed under him, but that we're 3 games into it, and after everything that was spent, understand something. Since Dave Gettleman took over as the GM in 2018, they used the number 2 pick on a running back, a number 6 pick on a quarterback, a number 4 pick on a left tackle, and then they used a number 20 pick on a wide receiver. That's just in the draft. Forget about the free agent signings. And the bar is so low for this offense that they are averaging, 14 points or 2 points more than what they were averaging last year?
Yeah, it's
and
about
the crazy part about this is, your left tackle doesn't look as bad as he did last year.
He's played well. Yeah. I mean, from the preseason episode that we recorded, Andrew Thomas has been very good.
Right.
The lone bright spot.
Right. Yeah. Your quarterback has fixed, or not fixed, but has, it seems as though he's gotten his turnover problem, which is one of the big problems, under control. But yet, you're still not scoring. You're still not winning. And I think that just points simply to coaching. And I think that it is evident that the Giants when I talk about hopelessness as a fan, like, as a fan, we're seeing it with our own eyes. But ownership is still sitting there. This head coach is still sitting there saying, and this is not just in terms of Jason Garrett. This is on a much larger scale. But this owner and this head coach are still sitting there saying, we're all right. This is fine. Jason Garrett is still our offensive coordinator. That's where the hopelessness comes in. When we talk about, okay, cleaning house, firing everybody, fixing the organization, when you can't identify a problem that is so clear, how can I trust you? How can I have faith in you that you can hire the right person, that you can fix this organization? That's where the hopelessness comes in. And I think that everyone is starting to realize that yes, Jason Garrett is a problem, but he is, like I said, he is a small example of a much larger problem with this organization. And I agree with you. To an extent, I think the problem is so much deeper, but you have to fire Jason Garrett because you have to get an evaluation on your quarterback, and you're not getting that. You're not getting a fair one right now, or a full one right now. And the longer this goes on, the more it's detrimental to the Giants. Not just now, but for the future.
I agree.
Did I mention how much I loved the fans booing John Mara? Like, I thought it was, to me, I thought about it. Right? Yeah, but I didn't think it would be that bad. Like, I thought there, you know what's crazy about this? Like, if you actually, like, I watched that clip, like, multiple times that person tweeted out, and then I also watched the one that the Giants posted on their YouTube page. Like, when he called, like, the booing was so long and so loud that when, like, Eli Manning tried to calm them down, and like, I'm sure some people stopped. Yeah, and it didn't work. And then he like called Eli Manning a Hall of Famer, and like nobody cheered. They still were booing him.
Yep.
Like he was trying every pop to get the fans to like stop booing him, but it didn't work. And I have a theory. I think Steve Tisch was also supposed to have a few words, but then didn't when he saw the reaction to John Mara.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, like if you go back and watch that, I think Steve Tisch was meant to talk to, but he didn't because what happened to the owner. And then the owner after the game, I mean, with the trash cans.
It's just pure comedy.
Yeah, it is. Comedy. It's like the chair. I mean, come on. You know, like, you're the owner of this team. You know, this organization, it's bad. And it's week three, and we still have 14 more weeks to go. I'm very happy that the fan base is united, but this is bad. I want to talk about Saquon Barkley for a second.
Yeah, and let me just bring up one thing. Sure. Michael Strahan has a number jersey retirement later this season. The Giants might be winless, and they cannot cancel or reschedule that ceremony.
No.
So
and who are they? When is that?
I don't remember. I don't remember, honestly.
I have to see the opponent, but there could be more fans of the opposing team at the game.
It's very possible. All right, Saquon Barkley.
Saquon Barkley. I have never seen people move the goalpost as much as they do for Dave Gettleman and in the last 4 years. I texted you this morning and I said, if you get a chance, go back and watch that press conference from
the
2018 draft. Yeah, I tweeted a part of it. I actually watched it. I got to be honest with you, man. And I told you this too, and it was like watching an episode of The Office. Like, it was pure comedy. Like, this man was looking at people in the face, saying things that don't make sense. And, like, I'm sure a lot of people were like, what the hell is there? I mean, he was made fun of. But there were so many people that were like, yeah, he's right. That makes sense. And the best part, and I shared this on Twitter, was when he said that the running back makes the offensive line better.
He makes your quarterback better.
Yeah, like when I heard him say,
makes your defense better.
To me, that is astounding. But Saquon Barkley, he is, and I'm going to go ahead and say it. And maybe Saquon turns his season around and he rushes for 1,000 yards and whatever. But he's been incredibly underwhelming. I'm not even talking about just the injuries. I mean, injuries are a part of the game. I mean, listen, the stats don't lie. If you look at injuries, running backs get injured a lot more than any other position, and that's part of the reason why you don't take a running back that high. But, like, Saquon Barkley was the highest drafted running back since, I don't even know, before I was born. And, you know, he was touted as this generational talent, and, you know, this is the greatest prospect that we've seen in so long. And understand, 2018, when the Giants had the number 2 pick in the draft, it was the highest draft pick they've had. Right now, we're all used to picking in the top 5 because we've been picking in the top 5 for the past half decade. But this was the highest draft pick that the Giants had since they drafted Lawrence Taylor in 1981. I should know this. Since sure. Lawrence Taylor. And he has been incredibly underwhelming. And you can't just point to the offensive line. I think that's very short-sighted. He struggles in pass protection. His route running out of the backfield is not good. He does not make people miss anymore. He does not break tackles.
That's the big one.
Yes.
He does not make people miss anymore. And numerous times this season, we have seen him in the open field or with the ability to try to make a move, and he has just tripped. He has fallen down. And I said this week one when I was appalled at his lack of usage. This were like modern medicine. Like, this is 2021. It's been a full calendar year since he tore his ACL. He's had surgery. He's rehabbed it. I am not buying the injury excuse. I just don't buy it as the reason. If mentally he's not ready, then that's on him. Like, I'm sorry. And to his credit, and this is not like a credit thing, but like, Jason Garrett really hasn't used him out of the backfield on routes a lot this year.
But that's the thing. He's not a good route runner. But
regardless, like, all his pass catching opportunities have been as checkdowns or like last minute dump offs. Like, there hasn't been like any like Austin Eckler usage. It's been like, all right, nothing's open, boom, go make a guy miss, and he just can't make a guy miss. It's infuriating. It makes no sense that this guy just totally dropped off. And you look at the Wayne Gallman stats from last year, fucking Alfred Morris, like, these are guys that, like, they see a hole, they just hit the hole. They try to make the most out of that opportunity. They realize that they don't need to hit a home run on every play, and that getting 4 yards on a play is productive. And he just doesn't do that. He dances back there.
No, here's my thing. I understand what you're saying, but, like, when I talk about, like, for me personally, I've never been like, you always say you don't draft a running back in the first round. I feel like there's a couple of exceptions, and I thought Saquon is an exception. I never thought he was the right pick for the Giants at 2, but I always thought he was a top 10 pick in the draft. Part of the reason is because I felt like he was so good in terms of catching passes out of the backfield. Now, actually, not just out of the backfield. Like, you could line him up at receiver in the slot outside. Like, I was watching the game last night, and Aaron Jones, the way the Packers use him as a receiving back, it's great. And part of that is because he's such a good route runner as a running back. You can line him up out wide. You can line him up inside. He can run the zigs. He can run the curls. He can run the wheels. I mean, he's great in terms of route running. And I'm watching. I'm like, Saquon, I he's not doing that. Now, maybe Jason Garrett's not using him that direction, but like, he's not that crisp as a route runner. And to me, it's why I feel like he's been so underwhelming, and why I think just saying, well, it's not his fault, it's the offensive line, or it's the play, to me, that's short-sighted. Like, he's been an underwhelming football player. We know his struggles in pass protection. We know his struggles now that are evident in terms of catching passes in the backfield. He can't make people miss. In terms of running in between the tackles, that's not been a strong strength of him. But the fact that he's been able to break so many of those long runs, we've sort of like not discussed that. But that's been a problem. Like, him getting those consistent 4 yards, 3, 4 yards, 4 yards, getting yourself in second and manageable, or getting yourself in third and short. Like, that's not been there with Saquon. The majority of his career, it's been, hey, this is either going 60 yards, or this is either going 2 yards or 1 yard or no gain. And part of that, yeah, we've said it's the offensive line, but I think a lot of it has also been the fact that he's not good at running between the tackles. And I'm not going to call him soft, but that is something that, you know, you're like, wait a second, like, why can't we get those 4 yards? Why can't we get
if you're a running back in the NFL and you can't do the basic running back shit, what are you doing?
And that's the thing, like, when I talk about moving the goalposts, is because this was a guy touted as like a generational back. Like, this is going to be, he's not even in my top five right now. I'm being dead serious. Like, this is like, when I watch Saquon Barkley, I don't, like, at one point, yeah, there, you saw the talent, you're like, okay, this dude is like legit. But like, the last, like, his last, like, maybe like 10 to 15 games, even that the back end of that 2019 season, he had a couple of strong games. But if you watch him, he's not that consistent guy that's going to be able to get those 4 yards or run that route to catch that pass or make that guy miss. And it's more than just the injuries. It's the fact that he, like, I just watch him and I forget about generational. I don't really see like a star running back, and it's just my opinion. No, maybe the injury plays a role.
It's like ridiculous. It goes to the front office's total lack of foresight and planning. Like, you're going to let your GM spend a second overall pick on a running back who doesn't excel at running between the tackles, and then in the offseason you're going to go out and sign Jason Garrett, whose only success on offense was with Tony Romo and on an all-time great offensive line, and a running back who excels at running between the tackles and picking up 5 yards at a time. Like,
exactly,
but it just doesn't fit. It was a round peg in a square hole.
Right, but in terms of Saquon, I think people are just using that offensive line play calling.
No, as I agree with you. I agree with you.
To not address the elephant in the room. This dude has been underwhelming. Like, forget about second contracts. Forget about, like, all that shit. Like, this dude is, like, what is his value really in terms of like what can I get for you? Because right now
there is none.
I mean,
there is none.
Like it's bad. And like you said, man, like the injury stuff, I get it. You know, there is a mental side of this, but like it has been really, really like it's troubling because even like the get out of free jail card, which has been to trade him and hope you can get some type of capital, like
that's literally anything. That's I would pay a team to take him at this point.
It's really bad, and I think we've moved the goalposts so much, and people refuse to address that elephant in the room with him. And I mean, dude, you got to be honest with yourself. This is not like they took him number two overall. Like, can you name me running backs that were taken in the top five? Who, like, there's a level of expectation. We cannot just like drop the bar of how we're judging Saquon. This was the number two pick in the NFL draft. Completely underwhelming. And like Ethan, like you said, it goes back to, hey, goes back to the GM lack of understanding of positional value. And look, that's my thing on Saquon. Can he turn around and have a great year? Absolutely. There's still 14 games left. But through three games and through what I saw before the injury, it's been incredibly...
No, he's not deserving of the second contract. I mean, listen, they should have...
No.
I mean, he had the injury last year, but like... I don't know.
No, even before the injury. Go back before the injury. Like, go back to that week one game against Pittsburgh. Like, there was one run where he broke out, and it was like, oh, wow, like that's awesome. But then, other than that, there was nothing. But that's been what Saquon has been throughout his career so far, as if it's not a big play, he's not able to get you those four, those three, those four, those five, those 6 yards that can help you move the chains. And it is a huge problem.
What do you think John Mara is doing right now?
Oh, man. You got to be embarrassed. I mean, like, I imagine being a billionaire, right? Like, you know, I own a sports team, but like, if I get booed by like 60,000 people while I'm like, and remember, he's not like giving a speech about, hey, everything is going to be okay. Like, you know, we're going to figure this out.
We're talking about the greatest quarterback in franchise history.
Like, he's like talking good about Eli Manning, who's like loved by everybody. And you know, everybody loves Eli Manning. If you're a Giant fan, you love Eli Manning. Like, he's talking about that, and they're still booing him to the point where Eli Manning had to be like, yo, like, can you guys stop? And even on top of that, they didn't stop. I mean, I would really, like, just lock myself in a closet. I would withdraw, like, $2,000 from the bank, right, and just go gamble. Or, like, well, if I was a billionaire, more than that. But I would just go gamble. Like, I don't really know what I would do. Like, if I was smart, I would fire everyone.
But you're not smart in this scenario. You're, yeah, John Mara. Yeah,
right. And I do think that there is, speaking of firing, I do think that there's a huge benefit of firing people now. Can I explain? So I was having this discussion yesterday with a lot of people, and everyone's like, you can't fire anybody now. What good does it do firing a GM? You can't go and interview guys. And that you guys are right. You can't go and start interviewing, throw candidates at me, Ethan. I know you have a couple of GM candidates on your mind.
Yeah, whatever.
So
Mike Borgonzi. There you go.
Yeah, the Chiefs, right? He's with the Chiefs?
Yeah. He's the VP of something.
You can't interview him. You can't interview the guy in Indianapolis. You can't go into these organizations and interview candidates, and that's true. But we talk about evaluation earlier with Daniel Jones. The Giants are 0-3. Their season is over. Look at the probability. It's really low. If you want to play the probability game, it's really low. We just talked about, we can look at their schedule. You find me a win. Their season is over. So they're now in full-blown evaluation mode. And their evaluation is not just players. It is from the owner himself down. So what you do is, and this is what I would do, and tell me if I'm not being logical, but I would fire Dave Gettleman, and I'd say, hey, Dave, listen, we're 0-3. It's unacceptable. You're seeing what's happening with fans. I need to start making changes. I need to start evaluating my organization, my football operations, I have to see if what I'm doing is working. And right now it's not. So you fire Dave Gettleman, and then you go and you go to Kevin Abrams or Chris Pettit or whoever you want to make your interim GM. And you sit him down and you say, look, you guys are candidates for the job, or you are a candidate for the permanent GM job, and you have the luxury that any other candidate doesn't have. You actually have an audition. They just have an interview. Here's the audition. You have to show me that you can run day-to-day operations for the Giants. We're now 0-3. We are in the evaluation season. We're now sellers. We have to now look to bring in as many assets. We have to build for the future. It's no longer working. We have these contracts. These guys are going on 30. Like, we need to, like, get younger. It needs to be a rebuild. Unfortunately, we thought this was the year, but it's not. And you see what he can bring in. You see if you can go out. You can, you know, there's a lot of teams that need corner depth. James Bradberry, I think, even though he's been incredibly underwhelming this season, has some value. He's still a good corner in this league. I'm sure you can bring something in. You can get something in return for him. And you say, look, nothing is off the table. If somebody calls asking for Saquon Barkley, we're going to entertain it. If someone calls asking for, you know, Kenny Golladay, we're going to entertain it. If somebody calls asking for any player, we're going to entertain it. And, you know, obviously, me being the owner, I'll have the final say right now in terms of what trade offer we can accept. But that's what I want you to do. And this audition will go a long way in me deciding whether to possibly keep you within the organization, possibly a more permanent GM role. We'll see. And you really have to begin auditing. And this is what I said last week. You have to now then sit down and spend the next 3-4 months looking at your football operations and seeing, what am I doing wrong? And you look at other organizations that are successful. You talk to people around the league. Michael Lombardi put out a great point, and this is something that I've been thinking about the last week, ever since after the Washington game, is that how do you fix it? And I think you fix it by bringing in a third party, bringing in people that don't have any, you know, biases toward you, that have no relationship with you, people that are just smart football minds. And to be honest, I really don't know who they are, like, but I'm sure there's people out there. And you bring that, you know, consulting firm in, and you let them look at your organization and tell you, hey, this is what you're doing wrong. This is what you're doing right. This is what you need to change. This is what you don't need to change. And you make your decisions based on that. There is a benefit to that. And then once the season is over and the offseason comes around, you have a good understanding of what you need to change. And that's when you can go and make the proper changes, hopefully hire the right people, interview the right candidates. So there's definitely a benefit to making that decision now, rather than waiting for the end of the season, where I'm sure there's going to be multiple, you know, opportunities to open up. And let's be real, the Giants may not, there might be 2-3 opportunities out there that are better than the Giants. So getting a head start on that actually helps you, especially when, you know, there could be better opportunities that open up down the road. But that's what I would do.
Who is the person making these decisions in your scenario?
Well, obviously it all goes back to the owner. But if the owner says, and this is why I share this,
Who is John Mara saying, get rid of these contracts, get what you can get?
The interim general manager.
Who is that going to be? Because it can't be Kevin Abrams. It can't be Kevin Abrams. It absolutely cannot. Because he's had his hand in every single bad contract over the last few years. You cannot trust him to get fair value back or properly evaluate these players, which he obviously has a clear bias for, considering he's the one that gave them these awful contracts. I don't disagree with you. I absolutely think that there's a benefit to getting rid of Gettleman. It just cannot in any circumstance be Kevin Abrams as interim GM, or even being interviewed after the season as Gettleman's replacement. Kevin Abrams is not as culpable as Dave Gettleman, but he's a really, really close number two, and I'm sick and tired of this fucking cap guru fucking bullshit talk, okay? Done with Kevin Abrams. He should be as jettisoned as Dave Gettleman is. Strap them together on either side of the rocket and just launch it into the atmosphere.
That's a fair point. I think the whole trading players and trying to see if you can get assets for some of the pieces that you have, that's a part of it. But for me, the much bigger thing in this is that you have to go through a month long. That's an audit, really. Like, that's what
agreed.
It is. Like,
I agree.
You got to get your organization audited, your football operations audited. And the organization's football operations are headed by Chris Mara.
Another problem.
Everybody knows that. Right. And he is John Mara's younger brother, I think he is a younger brother. And he also has, you know, ownership stake in the team too. Not as much as John Mara, but he has an ownership stake. This dude has a pretty large say. I mean, he's the vice president of football operations.
Like, he's got to be stripped of his title.
You can't have a guy that doesn't have to face consequences for his mistakes running your football operation.
100%.
Because, like,
this is the problem.
He's part of the owner. You know, but like, again, this is a mom and pop shop.
Everyone, right? We fired Dave Gettleman, but then every other person within the organization in that line of succession is someone that cannot be trusted to make the right moves or the proper evaluation because they have money at stake, their emotions at stake, or they're just too damn stupid.
The thing is, Chris Mara goes to, you know, pro days during the offseason. Like, this motherfucker has a pretty large say in who the Giants draft and who the Giants sign. Has he ever had a media press conference before? Like,
no.
Has he ever been in front? So, like, we know that we've seen him at pro days. We know he goes there. He's been to senior bowls. He's heavily involved in the football operations. He never has to answer for any of the mistakes that have happened over the last decade. He never has to stand in front of the media. He's like Teflon. What is the word? Teflon. What do they call him?
Teflon
Don. Basically, Teflon Don. Like John Mara stands in front of the media twice a year. This dude is fucking going to pro days, sitting in draft rooms, has a pretty large, is a vice president of football operations, and we never see this dude talk about anything or answer for anything. And oh, by the way, he's also a part owner of the team, and he's John Mara's brother.
It's like Cowboys level dysfunction.
So how can you expect shit to change if you are not accountable for anything that's happened over the last decade?
I agree, but it starts with
that. Goes back to what I'm saying. Like, you have to get, like, when you
outside
talk about
people,
audit,
the outside people
need to come in and tell you what you're doing wrong. Very similar to what happened in the 70s when the NFL stepped in.
That's
right?
It's honestly.
And I don't mean to be dramatic.
No,
but
that's what we're getting to. This is like dark age,
right? You know, like, they told you, look, you need to go and you need to get an outside guy in there because the way you're running your football operations is not working. And obviously, the NFL is not going to step in now. But the equivalent of that is an outside firm comes in, audits your organization.
Yeah,
tells you,
listen,
hey,
you're right. But again, this goes back to having faith in John Mara to do the right thing. Or having faith in Steve Tisch to be sober enough for long enough that he is forcing John Mara to actually go outside the organization. I'm dead serious. Like, this guy experiences shame and embarrassment. Like, I'm talking about Steve Tisch, just not nearly to the level that he should as co-owner of the New York Giants, that someone just take the vodka away from him for like 20 minutes. I'm serious. Just let the guy be sober enough to tell John Mara to go fuck himself and bring in some outside help. It's ridiculous.
There needs to be a full-blown, like, they need to burn the building down.
They do.
Like, that's why it's not just a GM. Yeah. It's not just a GM or a new head coach. This is much higher than that. And it goes all the way to the top to the owner.
And it has for years. It has for years.
And maybe if he continues to get embarrassed by fans and he comes in on a Sunday or Monday and he sees his stadium filled with, you know, fans of the opposing team, maybe that is a wake-up call. But, I mean, he is public enemy number one. And this is not just from a local New York standpoint. Like, you are starting to see this become a national conversation. Like, people are talking about this, you know, that cover the league all out, that they know that, listen, what's happening with the Giants football operations is not working, and this organization is really in a bad spot. So,
yep.
We'll see.
Joe Judge was fucking terrible yesterday.
Punting on 4th and 39, it doesn't make any sense.
No, I'll make it worse. Can I make it worse? That there was a holding. Yes. There was an offensive holding.
Yes.
Called on the play that the Falcons declined.
Declined.
They declined because they knew that Joe Judge didn't have the fucking balls to go for it on 4th and 3 on the Falcons 39. This guy comes in with this tough talk, with his fucking 30 NYPD hats on the sideline. He's sweet talking John Mara about tough football, and you gotta win the trenches, and you gotta be aggressive. And he's just punting constantly in opponents' territory. I'm sick of it. I'm over it.
Against Atlanta,
the worst defense in the NFL. He's just as culpable for the offense being bad as Jason Garrett, in my opinion. This guy needs to go. The honeymoon period is not just over. We are in like very, very hot seat territory. Like this guy has proven absolutely nothing. He beat one good quarterback last year, and he did it without Dan Jones. He was beating a slew of backups against bad defenses. He has not proven anything. His shtick is old. If you were gargling his nuts after he jumped in mud during training camp and was making players run laps, God bless you. I was never fully on board, and you can count me fully off board now. I was willing to give the guy a chance, understood that it was a risk. Enough is enough. I'm done. This guy has a long ways to go for me to even consider hopping on that bandwagon again. I'm off.
Yeah,
I'm done.
I'm done. And I was a lot higher on Joe Judge than you. I mean, last year, you know, every guest we had on, I would ask him, hey, do we have our head coach? Do I need to stop worrying about this?
Everyone said yes.
I'm done. Yeah, everyone said yes. Yeah, and my confidence grew in him more and more. But I'm done. You cannot, like, he makes the same mistakes that David Culley makes, and we laugh at David Culley.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like his clock management, his decision making late in games, and awful challenges. Like every week, this dude makes a terrible coaching decision, and it's like, what the fuck am I watching? And these are clear signs of a guy that isn't qualified to be a head coach. And I want to just put this out there for people to understand. There's 14 games left. Obviously, shit can change. But right now, as I sit here at 2:23 p.m. on September 27th, 2021, I am done with Joe Judge. I think he's got to go. I think he makes Pat Shurmur's decisions look reasonable. I mean, this dude, you're punting.
He looks Ben McAdoo. He makes Ben McAdoo look like he was in Mensa. Like he's a fucking
You're playing
genius.
The Atlanta Falcons. It is 7-6. You have one of the best kickers. I know what happened yesterday with kickers and, you know, Justin Tucker. But Graham Gano has made like 30 kicks in a row.
He's your best player.
Yeah, he can make 50-some-odd-yard field goals. Okay, you want to be conservative. Fine. Kick a 57-yard field goal. Why are you punting from the 39-yard line? And you're not even winning. That's the thing. That's the crazy part about this is it is 7-6 at that time, right? And he's like in his mind, what's going through your mind? You're at the 39-yard line. You average under 20 points per game. Like, I don't understand. Like, what are you, like, you're going against the Atlanta Falcons. This is not like, they're giving up 40 points a game. You're at home. 4th and 3?
Second overall running back.
From the 39?
Second overall running back. 4th overall tackle. 6th overall quarterback. 20-something overall wide receiver. $17 million receiver. 23rd overall tight end. Sterling Shepard, second round pick. And you're fucking punting. You're fucking punting. Bozo. He's a bozo.
The Atlanta Falcons.
Bozo. You're going against the fucking Falcons. Like, he's a bozo.
When you can't understand your surroundings, like that is, to me, that it's such
a joke.
It is so bad, man. And if I am, like, I'm watching that, I'm like, yo, this dude is not capable of being a coach in this league, man. I'm sorry. Like, I'm sorry. This is not... like I said, David Culley makes the same type of mistakes, the same type of decisions late in games where he punts from, like, the opponent's, like, 40-yard line. This dude punted from the 39. And he has a kicker who can make field goals.
Yeah.
I'm off, man. I'm off. Honeymoon is over? Shit, I'm filing for divorce. this shit is over, man. I can't do it. When you're that bad in terms of coaching decisions, like, you, like, we can't win games with the decisions that you're making. And this is a business where it's about wins and losses. And this dude is not even going to get into the penalties and, like, all that shit that still's going on after 3 weeks. But it's just, like you said earlier, like, there, it could get way worse. Like, this is 2000, it could be 2017. Yeah. I mean, if this dude continues to act the way he's acting with the laps and the sort of, like, we're going to play mistake-free football. Meanwhile, he's making critical mistakes in games and burning timeouts and not having guys
prepared. I mean, that was awful. The clock management is a totally separate issue.
You're definitely going to lose your locker room. Listen, we're 3 weeks into the season. Kenny Galladay's already been yelling at a coach. Then he went out in front of a camera and said, no, I wasn't yelling at my quarterback. I was yelling at my offensive coordinator 2 weeks into the season. And then you also have a rookie who's, you know, Kadarius Toney is an interesting dude. But he calls it like he sees it. And I love that. And he's a little upset. So, like, this, we're week three, and your top two of the top three receivers are already frustrated. And, oh, by the way, Jabril Peppers also made a comment about how he's confused about his role with the team. So,
I mean, he should be traded. Another fucking brilliant move.
Yeah.
From Gettleman. That's just like another first-rounder.
When the Giants fire Dave Gettleman, I will have an episode for you guys where I will break down this man's just sheer incompetence.
We might need 3 hours.
Yes, we do. We might need 12 hours. Yeah. But hey, listen.
All right.
I'm done with Joe Judge.
Yeah.
I can be brought back on the bandwagon, but I'm off right now. I can't take this anymore.
Me too. So I tweeted out for questions an hour and 8 minutes ago. We have 69 replies.
Nice. Yes.
You want to pull it up and we can alternate.
But I want to ask you one question. Maybe this is one of the questions that we got too. But I want to look at the Giants' schedule right now, and I want you to be honest and tell me, first, when their first win is coming, and second, how many wins could they have? They go to New Orleans on Sunday.
That's a loss.
First game in the Dome, they're losing that. Then they go at Dallas.
Loss.
And I think they're going to lose that
game. So 0-5. Then they come home for the Rams, who are playing at an insane level. That's going to be a loss. 0-6.
Matthew Stafford, MVP.
MVP front runner right now. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Then they're home against the Panthers. I mean,
the Panthers undefeated.
All indications that's a loss. Their defense is playing pretty well. 0-7?
0-3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yes. Then they go at the Chiefs Monday night. Don't even bother answering that question.
Yep.
Then the Raiders come on November 7th.
Maybe they could win that. Maybe.
The Raiders are 3-0.
But they haven't really beaten anyone tough. Like, I was on the Raiders bandwagon last year. The wheels really fell off towards the end. I think that they're a decent team. I don't know if they're as good as people think. I'm just saying.
So if I hold a gun to your head, is that the game that they're winning?
A gun to my head? No. A gun to my head, I maybe the Dolphins. Okay. Maybe the Dolphins three weeks later. But, like, if you're asking me to pick the games where I think they have the best chance, like, that's a maybe. That's a maybe. The All Raiders right. at home.
So the Raiders are the first win, maybe at home. Okay, yeah, cross country, I can be bought into.
Yeah.
Then at the Bucks Monday night again. Not I don't even need to at the home against the Eagles. To me, that's where I put the first win.
Maybe. Yeah.
That's where I put the first win. Like, you're asking me, like, where gun to my head? Where does the Giants' first win come? I'm going to say right there.
Yep.
November 28th. So that's two wins we're giving them. And then at the Dolphins, I don't think they're going to win that game.
Is Tua healthy?
Play hard.
Is Tua going to be healthy then?
Jacoby Brissett looked good yesterday. Listen, you have to be fair. I don't think they can
Okay, fine. So they lose that. Then they definitely lose to the Chargers.
Then they
lose
play
to the Cowboys.
Dallas. I think Dallas will be playing for some serious playoff implications at that point. Then they play at the Eagles, in my lifetime, they won't ever sweep the Eagles again, so I'm not going to pick them there. And then at the Bears, possibly. and then home against Washington, I could see them winning. So I put this right now at four games.
Maybe.
Where they can win, where the first win could come November 7th, or it could come November 28th. Or I'll give you Miami, too, possibly the Dolphins. So I'll put the Dolphins in there, too, on December 5th.
So we're looking at Point max being, at max a 4- or 5-1 team.
5-1 team.
Max. Absolute max.
Could they? I'll even be generous. I mean, let's say maybe they split with Dallas. I mean, you never know. Dallas, you can't never trust them.
Yeah.
Right? You're looking at ceiling. We're talking, you can't go above this. 6.
That's optimistic, yeah.
That's a ceiling, right? Ceiling's about being optimistic.
But we agree that they're starting, so they're 0-3, 0-4, 5, 6, 7, 8. But they're starting 0-8.
0-8. Yeah.
Well.
this was their easy part of the schedule, by the way. Broncos, Washington, Atlanta. They were supposed to be 3-0 and then fall apart. They actually fell apart before. So, 5, I'll give them, you know what, I'm going to say 4 wins.
Okay.
Because the injuries are starting to mount, especially on the defense side of the ball. Blake Martinez, torn ACL. So, I'm going to say 4-13.
Okay. Let's do some questions. Trying to figure out which one.
By the way, Maggie Gray tweeted, is there one good reason Jason Garrett is still the Giants OC?
No.
Somebody responded and said the problems with the Giants are so much bigger than Jason Garrett, and Carl Banks liked that tweet.
Sorry, read the tweet that he liked?
Yeah.
No, read the tweet that again.
The tweet that he liked was a reply to that tweet saying, "The problems with the Giants are so much bigger than Jason Garrett."
Wow, better hope John Mara doesn't see that. Otherwise, he's going to take Carl off payroll like they took Larry Tynes off payroll.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I'll mention this. So I told you this, but so Jason OTC was doing a Twitter Spaces a few days ago, and our good friend Dan Ricker, who's a listener, good guy. Good buddy of mine on Twitter, purposefully asked him a question about the Giants and their total cap mismanagement. And Carl Banks was listening to the Twitter Spaces. And as soon as Jason started to criticize the Giants' cap management, Carl left the Twitter Spaces. Just nice. Exited. Fucking
and,
coward.
Well, I think maybe Carl Banks has reached his breaking point with that. I would say that's pretty severe criticism coming from Carl Banks, liking that tweet.
I would agree.
Knowing what we know about Carl.
Yep.
Company man, Carl.
All right. Anyways, you pick a question.
Let's go to questions.
You pick a question.
All right. So we answered the one about the schedule. This is from Mike_NYI.
Mike.
NYY. New York Yankees. Scary. Yeah, I like him too. I like his content as well. Maybe you will, but I need you to speak on the mayor quote, "I'd boo too if I were 0-2, because there might not be a quote to describe how much out of touch with mayor is with everything than that one. Yeah, you're right. Completely out of touch. Just doesn't understand, really. And maybe he understands, but he didn't want to admit that to the media. But yeah, that's not how you respond. Just saying "I would boo too" would have been perfectly fine.
Yeah, he doesn't get it. That's the most worrisome part.
I like this one. If you assembled a starting lineup of Gettleman's best draft picks with the Giants, would they have been able to win one game since 2018? So, like, let's just say, like, okay. Well, the draft picks only, right?
Yeah.
You got the quarterback, the running back, the left tackle. The 2-3 pass rushers. You got the nose tackle. What corners did he draft? DeAndre Baker, Aaron Robinson. I guess how I'll rephrase this question is, if you look at the Giants draft picks under Gettleman since 2018, how many stars do you see?
Zero. Bona fide stars, zero.
Yes, I agree
with multiple top 10 picks.
Yes.
And two more coming up.
Who would you try to trade for draft capital? Already mentioned that. How terrified are you that... I like this question. How terrified are you that Kevin Amon is probably going to be the next GM, knowing how John Mara operates? I don't think that if this season goes as bad as it is, I really don't think that that's going to be the... I'll tell you what terrifies me more.
Prove me wrong. I'll say that much. I have no faith in them to do the right thing.
No. I really don't think Kevin Amon... But let me tell you what I think could happen. Okay? This is what scares me, though. This is what keeps me up at night. This Giants season spirals out of control. They finish 4-13, right? And they keep the head coach and then bring in a GM that works with the head coach. To me, that is just...
Same mistake.
Doing the same...
For the third fucking time.
Twice. Yes, that's what hurts me. That would be the third time, right? Yes, third time. That, to me, that's what keeps me up at night more than... I don't think... If they are firing Dave Gettleman, they're not hiring Kevin Abrams. And I'll certainly sit here and eat crow if I'm wrong, but I don't think that. What scares me, though, is doubling down on the head coach, which I don't think they should.
Who would you try to trade for draft capital?
Everyone.
Let's talk obvious candidates, though. Evan Engram,
right.
Very obvious candidate.
Right, expired contract.
People are cheering when the guy comes off the field.
Yeah, I genuinely feel bad for him.
I don't really care. Call me heartless. Call me heartless. I don't care. Yeah. I just don't care. Get a late round pick for him. See ya. Yeah. His time here is done.
Jabril Peppers, same thing.
Jabril Peppers, absolutely same thing.
Can I give you one too?
Of course.
Dexter Lawrence.
Okay. I don't know what you're going to get for him. But sure.
That's the thing.
Saquon Barkley too.
I'd rather trade him for something than pay him, you know, over $10 million because he's not an impactful player.
Yeah, I mean, agree. Saquon Barkley, obvious one.
Yes, obviously. You listen, yeah.
Trying to think who else is like they can move without crazy amount of dead cap. I think
James Bradbury, they can move because they can free up cap. So the way James Bradbury's contract works, I actually looked at this before. I should have wrote it
this
down.
This is after the restructure?
This is after the restructure, yes. According to over the cap. So if they trade him, right, let's say mid-season, next year, they free up, it's a $7 million dead cap hit, but you free up $13.5 million.
Okay, so put him on the block. Blake Martinez is an easy cut for me at the end of the season. I think they save like eight and change. Go rehab your ACL and play with your Pokemon cards, you fucking loser. I hate Blake Martinez. Like, I'm sorry about the knee injury. I hope that it doesn't impact your career, but I fucking hate him and I wish that he's off the roster.
Yeah.
Like this dude is like the biggest like fake motivational player I think the Giants have like ever had. Like this guy is constantly...
I didn't think you'd say this on air.
No.
Go ahead.
No, this guy is like all we hear in the offseason is like the fucking him tweeting those emojis with like the smoke coming out of his nose about like how he's disrespected and no one around the league respects him and he should have made the Pro Bowl and he didn't make the Pro Bowl. Like, bro, you had one good season on a defense that wildly overperformed and your signing was like highly criticized everywhere in the league, especially from Packers fans. They were like, okay, good riddance. Like, and now he's out here tweeting the comeback story is going to be better than whatever, like the same shit that Joe Judge was saying about Saquon. Bro, you're not Saquon. You're not even in the same like stratosphere. And that's saying a lot about you because we don't even think Saquon is in like some crazy level of overperformance. Like, enough. I'm sorry, it sucks that you tore your ACL, but if I can save cap and get your annoying ass off the team, sayonara.
Sterling Shepard has another one that they could trade
to. Yes.
That's one I hope they do because I want to see Sterling Shepard. You know where I want to see Sterling Shepard? In Green Bay.
Yeah.
That's where I want to see Sterling Shepard. Yeah. With Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, I mean, you go down the line. I mean, pretty much everyone is available. I just don't think anyone can garner. Like, I don't think Lorenzo Carter has value. I don't think Will Hernandez has value.
No.
I don't think, I don't think, like, Julian Love has value or Shane Zimenez. Those guys don't have value, and their cap hits are very minimal. But, I mean, Shepard, Evan Ingram, Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram, Jabril Peppers. You can't move Leonard Williams. It's
awful. Just really,
you can't move him.
He's been awful.
Non-existent. I mentioned Dexter Lawrence. I would listen to offers on Dexter Lawrence. But yeah, I mean, you become seller, man. You listen to everything, and anybody can be had at the right price.
Yep. Oh, someone actually asked us if we can guarantee a special podcast documenting all of Gettleman's failures.
Yeah, we said that. I'm going to do that.
Yeah. Man. I'm looking at these questions. You got any good ones? So many.
A lot of them, people want people fired. People are thinking about the next GM. You think John Mara will speak at Strahan's retirement ceremony after what happened yesterday?
He has to.
Right.
I think the only saving grace for John Mara is what you said earlier, is that there might be more of the opposing team's fans in the stands, so the booing's not going to be as loud.
They might cheer him.
They might. It depends who the opponent is. I keep forgetting. But yeah, that's his.
Can you talk about encouraging fans not to renew their season tickets? I fully support any fan not giving their money to John Mara until there's real change with this organization.
Yep.
People work hard for their money, and I wouldn't give it to this organization. I certainly don't. I used to drive up once or twice a year from where I live here in Maryland up to, you know, make the 4-hour drive to watch the Giants at least twice a year, spend $400 or $500 on tickets. Not anymore. I don't order Giants merch anymore.
It's tough. I'm like very close to MetLife. Like, I think if I drove right now, I could probably be there in 20 minutes or so. That was my dad's got two season tickets that he splits with, like, my childhood best friend's father, so they have one ticket each, and like they divvy them up throughout the season. I was telling him like a week ago, I'm like, oh, like, you know, trying to go to a game in late October. He's like, okay, cool.
You're going to go to a game.
He was like, yeah, no problem. Because, like, I want to go. Like, I want to tailgate. Like, there are a lot of people from Giants Twitter that I've been, you know, interacting with. I'd love to meet everyone, party in the parking lot. Like, I'm obviously not going for the product on the field. Now, yeah. I don't even know if I could stomach that.
Don't do that. Don't do that to yourself.
So, we'll see.
Don't support John Mara's incompetence. Yeah. I'm going to address this one last time because I get these all the time. In hindsight, would you rather have drafted Parsons or trade back? I am trading back. There's only about one or two guys that I'm not trading back for in this draft. Other than that, I'm trading back with taking the Bears any day of the week.
Yeah.
Don't ask me.
I know Slater. The I know Bears Slater's look good. I was a big Slater guy. I actually liked Slater more than I liked who's the
Penei Sewell.
Penei Sewell, yep.
Penei Sewell's pretty fucking good.
I know he's good, but I was a Slater stan.
Yeah,
I'd still take the first.
Especially Chicago's first.
Yeah,
that's going to be pretty high. I think Chicago is actually very similar to the Giants. They have really incompetent owners.
Yes. Dude, I remember like 2 years ago, there was a quote that like the Bears owner, like, someone asked like, oh, who do you like what other owners do you talk to around the league about like what like you're doing? And they listed the Giants, and I was like, that makes so much sense. Yeah. If anyone knows that interview that I'm talking about or can find that quote, I would love you forever.
Yeah. So the Giants have the Bears first round draft pick. So I like it. I love it, man. I mean, I hope Justin Fields turns out to be great for them, because I think I know a couple of my friends are Bear fans, and it's tough for them. And I hope Justin
Fields. That's how you know that the Bears and the Giants ownership talk. Like, Matt Nagy hasn't been fired yet. Like, that's just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Matt Nagy's calling plays for Justin Fields like he's Andy Dalton. I mean, we see that. We see that over here all the time.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man. Again, a lot of it is the same stuff we cover, man. When is this going to happen? When is that going to happen? All I can tell you is, I mean,
I'm rooting for a blowout on Sunday. I'm rooting for Saints 42, Giants 3.
Oh, they're going to get the first game in the dome.
Fans. I remember I said this week one. I said that you don't want to go to New Orleans 0-3, 1-2.
And that defense, off a hurricane. Their defense is so good, man.
Yep.
If Daniel Jones doesn't turn the ball over against New Orleans, I will be impressed.
It's going to be a tough game. Hopefully the Giants get their shit rocked.
They are. Yeah,
that's where I'm at. Really, like, listen, I know a lot of people give me flack, like, late in the season. You know, you root for your team to lose for a better draft position. Even if there's, like,
I'm not rooting for that anymore.
Huh?
Like, I don't care about that no more. Like, I don't care about losing anymore. Like, winning and losing.
No,
like,
I'm just actively rooting for losses. Because the more that they lose and the more the owner feels embarrassment, maybe that there's some change that happens, is what I'm getting at.
So I'm rooting for turmoil, and I hate to be cynical. I'm rooting for dysfunction with
embarrassment.
The locker room. I'm rooting for embarrassment because I want this owner to wake up and realize, like, what his football operations is not working. But in terms of, like, I want to lose so I can get X draft pick, I don't give a fuck about draft picks anymore. I can root for Chicago losing. I don't need to worry about the Giants losing. So, to me, like I said, I'm rooting for that at insult to injury type thing, where you are really just the laughing stock. And John Mara was embarrassed last week, and I think it's only going to get worse. It's only going to get worse.
All right. Should we wrap it up?
That's it.
Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitch Radio, Spotify. Unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. That's it. 0-3.
Talk.
On the road to 0-4.
We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, talk to you guys next week. Can't wait.
Yeah.